Welcome to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis here in our downtown Chicago studio, joined as always by my guy, Jack Heinrich, our second to last show of the season, Jack. I can't believe we're already in mid-April.
I can't either, and tomorrow's the last game, and it feels kind of quick, but kind of long at the same time when you look back to the beginning of the year.
It does.
You were down in Florida at the beginning of the year.
It was. Holy cow, yeah. That felt like a long time ago, but it also felt like the season kind of flew by because it was a lot more fun this year than last year for the Blackhawks. The problem, Jack, is the last month or so hasn't gone particularly well for the Blackhawks, and we're going to just dive right into it. The Hawks have just one win in their last 10 games so far going into their season finale against the San Jose Sharks tomorrow night at the United Center. And Jack, I can't help but think this is going to come across like we're kind of making excuses or whatnot, but after the trade deadline, when the Blackhawks got rid of Nick Foligno, Jason Dickinson, Connor Murphy, three key members of the leadership group, they were essentially the entire leadership group for the Blackhawks, with Murphy and Dickinson wearing A's on their sweater and Nick Foligno wearing the C. When they got traded away, it was Kyle Davidson and the management group essentially giving the keys over to the young players for the final month, 5 weeks of the season. And the Hawks have been going through some trying times, and they don't have those veterans inside the locker room right now. There are a couple, Ryan Donato, Tyler Bertuzzi, Teuvo Teravainen, but maybe specifically on the back end, there's Matt Grizzlick's done for the season with a season-ending injury. And so it's a really young decor. Lefshinov has been out for the last couple weeks with an injury. It just feels like a lot of these rookies have started to hit a wall. And I went inside the Blackhawks locker room today after practice, and I asked a couple of the guys, some of the young players, how they're feeling right now. And like, you know, do you feel mentally and physically spent? And a lot of them said, yeah, like that. This is the most hockey that they've ever played in their NHL or in their hockey careers as far as a full 82-game season in the professional level, because you have some of the college guys that were playing at most 40 games a season, where they would only play weekends and they would have classes during the week and they would train and practice and then they would play two games over the weekend and then they would do it all over again. So it's just been a grueling schedule, and I honestly just quite literally think that the team is straight up running out of gas. And when you see where the Blackhawks are in the standings, when you're essentially not playing for anything, it's probably hard to find that extra gear when we're in mid-April, when the standings don't matter. And it's kind of like mentally and physically, a lot of the guys are exhausted. So it's not what I think people want to hear, but I do think that is playing a massive role right now, where a lot of these guys have played their first professional seasons this year, and their gas tanks are on E.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could see it a little bit too, just that, like you said, I think the condensed schedule too. I know they had most of the teams besides Teravainen had 3 weeks off, but
yeah, but
it's still like they're playing right after another.
Yeah,
like, and so squeezed.
I had that same thought too, where it's like, oh well, there was an Olympic schedule where they did have that 3 week break, but it was really only kind of like an 8 or 9 day break, because the Hawks had like a mini training camp. And they practiced like 9 out of those 10 days, and Jeff Blashill put him through it. You know, that wasn't just, hey, let's kind of coast through 20 or so minutes. Exactly. And so it was a demanding schedule. So sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I agree. Like, the compressed schedule with the Olympic break, and then you think, oh yeah, well, there was that 3 week gap where only Teravainen played in the Olympics, but it was like those guys also weren't, you know, chilling in Cabo for 3 weeks. Like they came back and they were working for those back half 2 weeks going into the second half of the year.
Yeah, and then I mean, I haven't even known what day it is some of the time, you know, because of the all the games in a row, and maybe that says more about me than them, or says me in general, but. It was a lot of hockey, and then all these guys are kind of going through it for the first time. I think I've seen a lot of quotes where guys are saying when you do your first couple of years in the NHL, you really learn how to take care of your body for the whole season, and that's something you just got to learn by playing, right? So these guys are all going through it together, and it seems like, I mean, we were in the locker room on Masters Friday. The vibes are still good. Like, everyone's still like liking each other and goofing around, like making jokes. But I mean, they obviously take the hockey seriously. So like, it's not a locker room. Like, no one's getting like mad at each other or anything. But I think it is just wearing on them. And I think Jeff Blashill said after the game, like, a few end up in the back, like their big mistakes ended up in the back of the net, and then the score is just out of it, and then it's really hard to get up and going. So they practice today, and then they got the game tomorrow, so hopefully they're ready to go. San Jose, they just got eliminated from the playoffs, so who knows how they're going to be feeling heading into it, so maybe the Hawks can take advantage of that.
Yeah, no question. I think the hard part probably, and this is the general theme that I saw on social media last night from a portion of the fan base. Now, I want to be careful not to lump the entire fan base into what how social media right. reacts, because sometimes it just doesn't, the internet doesn't really feel like a real place to kind of gauge what, you know, the majority of fans are feeling. But the way that these last few games have gone, 7-2 loss to the Carolina Hurricanes, where Carolina rested essentially all their top guys, 5-3 loss to the St. Louis Blues. That was the Hall of Fame game for the Blackhawks. And then, of course, yesterday it was a 5-1 loss to the Buffalo Sabres, where Hawks held a 1-0 lead in the first, then give up 5 unanswered. And it's just, you know, I think it's a complete opposite way of how the Blackhawks are finishing the season of relative to how they finished last year, where there was a lot of positive momentum. But I guess the counter argument is a lot of these young players have hit the rookie wall, and it's like they're experiencing this for the first time. And also with the loss, I think it was Saturday's loss against the St. Louis Blues. And then the next day, I believe the Calgary Flames ended up winning. And so that's solidified the Blackhawks locking up another top four pick in the 2026 NHL draft. I know the Hawks were probably hoping to be higher up in the standings this year. And at one point they were literally competing for a playoff spot. This was in mid-December even in January, like
they were still hovering.
And they obviously dealt with the big injuries to Connor Bedard and Frank Nazar, who at the time were probably the two best players on the team. You can at least say the best forwards, as far as, you know, Connor Bedard, obviously the best player, and then Nazar, wherever you want to slot him in. But I think the Hawks had so much momentum going in this season that when the Bedard and Nazar injuries happened, it almost like zapped the momentum out of the team, and they had to really dig deep and try to regain that. And so it's been hard for them to find it. But as far as the Hawks getting another top four pick, I think that's got to be a silver lining to how this season has finished, is while you do want to take steps in the standings, this is another very strong draft class at the top, where they can potentially get a player that can step into the lineup right away. And so if I were to offer a glimmer of hope to Blackhawks fans that are seeing how this season is finishing and are getting a little bit discouraged, I would say, next year, the Blackhawks hopefully get a full 82-game season of Connor Bedard, because it felt like when he got hurt, he was tied for third in the NHL scoring race with, I believe it was MacKinnon and McDavid, and he was tied with Macklin Celebrini, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So, like, if that momentum didn't get disrupted, I wonder where Connor Bedard, I feel like Connor was on pace to be an 100-plus point player. Then you hopefully have a full season of Frank Nazar, but also you're going to get a full season of Anton Frondell, who looks like the real deal. Yeah. He really does. And he such a smart hockey player. And I think that's why he's been able to jump in right away. And you see the physical tools, but my gosh, is he a really smart hockey player for an 18-year-old. And then, you know, the Hawks are also expecting Roman Kantsarov to make the jump to North America next year. He's likely going to be a full-time NHL player. And so then you look at some of the players on the back end, Artem Lefshinov, Sam Rinzel, they both went through ups and downs this year. I think they can kind of recollect themselves in the summer. Hopefully they can take that next step next year. And again, there are going to be some pieces as well that hopefully the Blackhawks add, but this isn't going to be a summer where like all the chips are going to be pushed into the table. Like, Kyle Davidson is going to want to get aggressive at some point, but he's not going to do so irresponsibly. And so it's like a twofold question. Like, when those big name players become available, Kyle Davidson is ready to push that. Like we saw, like reportedly a couple years ago, Hawks were in on Jake Guentzel, right? And he ends up picking the Tampa Bay Lightning because Hawks likely just weren't fitting his timeline, right? You know, like, you know, we know the Blackhawks tried a couple years ago to get Matthew Nyes from the Toronto Maple Leafs because, you know, there was a Marc-Andre Fleury deal, but Fleury nixed it. He went to Minnesota instead. So there have been examples of Kyle actually getting aggressive in wanting to explore getting a big name. But I think internally, the Hawks are going to have to take a next step with their young players going into next season, or I should say just all of next season. They really need to take that next step. But I think I put more stock in how the Blackhawks first half of the season went and not the second half of the year went, because it felt like the first half of the season was more indicative of where they were trending. And then boom, two big players in a 4-game span, Bedard and Nazar, get hurt. And it's like, it just almost derailed the season right there with the momentum.
Yeah, and I think Jeff Blashill said that in his media there was a game last night. Yeah, there was. Yeah. See, I'm confused.
All blend in, man.
he was saying that he's like, the progress was here. He's like, obviously, this last month's not what you want, but like when you get away from it and look. I mean, last year was a little easier, right? Didn't they win 2 in a row at the end of the year? At least
I think they went 3-0-1 in their last 4 games. Yeah.
And they won that crazy overtime game. Like the vibes are high, you know? So it does depend sometimes when these streaks happen. So it would be nice if they win tomorrow, but I think they did make the steps. I mean, you look at Bedard before that injury, man. Like, I kind of even forgot he was in the top 5 in points, and he looks like he's trending towards Team Canada. Like, he's having like that big time year, and that's something hopefully he can just be healthy, like you said, and they can move forward. And these guys, with their decor, hopefully they can have that season like in the weight room, on the ice, and just get away from hockey too a little bit, because they've played so much, and they come back stronger and it takes them a little longer. But you look, and you said this year was more enjoyable than last year. I think all the guys that are like expected to be here on the next good Blackhawks team, they're here. They're right. They're on the NHL team, or and they're not really in the AHL now. They're all pretty much up right now. So I think that helps give you a glimpse, and it's understandably frustrating when the team has all these disappointing losses to end the year, and some of them have been a little lopsided. So next year will be the big year, and hopefully the guys take the step, because this is going to be most of the guys in the group when they're hopefully contending.
Yeah, no question. And we mentioned how the Hawks are guaranteed a top 4 pick in this year's draft. It's because they are locked into the 31st place, so they can't move up, can't move down. The worst they can do is fall to number 4. But let's just say the board stays the same. The Hawks are essentially have the best odds to stand pat at getting the number 2 overall pick. So if the Hawks do, let's just say, you know, we fire up Tankathon right now and just everything stays the same. If the Hawks are picking with the 2nd overall pick, I'm assuming they would take it. 1 and 2 is probably going to be McKenna and Ivar Stenberg. What order that is up for grabs, depending on the need, whichever team likes the other player better. But both of those guys feel like they would step into the NHL right away. So we mentioned the silver lining of full season of Anton Frondell next year, full season of Roman Kancerov, which would be his first season in the NHL. Hopefully healthy seasons for Bedard and Nazar. Then you potentially add another player of, you know, McKenna, Stenberg caliber.
Nice top 6.
That I mean, you just added, you know, 3 top 6 players, boom, like right away. And so that's kind of like a reason to get excited about the future and about next season, because I do think the way that things have finished this year for the Blackhawks is not necessarily going to be the way that it starts next year, because it's going to be a totally newfound energy for the team as they go into next year. So I'm sure we'll get into a lot of that on our last show of Blackhawks Live, which will be next Monday, as we kind of wrap the season up and look at interviews or do exit interviews. All right, let's do our quick injury report, sponsored by Illinois Bone and Joint Institute. Injured after hours, they've got you covered with access to their clinical team beyond regular clinical hours. Learn more at ibji.com. We've talked about Artem Lefshinov and Matt Grizzlick have had season-ending injuries, so they will not be returning for the Blackhawks this season. obviously there's only one game left. So we knew about that. We have gotten some extra word on Oliver Moore, who has been skating for the last week or so, but he had been doing it in a non-contact sweater. Yesterday at morning skate and then today at practice, he shed the non-contact sweater and was in a regular jersey. So he was cleared to practice in full. However, he will not be playing tomorrow in the season finale because the Hawks just want to be extra cautious. It is an injury that it could potentially flare up if he, you know, is hit the wrong way. So there's no point in risking it for the Blackhawks. So he will not be playing in the season finale tomorrow. But the encouraging sign is it will not disrupt his off-season training. So that's obviously positive news on the Oliver Moore front. We got more to get to here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Mike Palm from Circa is going to join us next, right here on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Time now to hit the phone lines and bring in our guy, as always, Mike Palm from Circa, for our weekly check-in. And Mike, it's getting warm out here in Chicago. We're in the final week of the NHL regular season. That's how you know that playoff hockey is around the corner.
That's almost here, Charlie. We know all 16 teams that are going to be in the bracket. A few series haven't been determined yet, but all the drama is gone. It ended last night.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of the playoff matchups are in order, still trying to sort out home ice. Really, the one division that is still kind of up for grabs, and a lot is the Pacific, whether it's the number one seed, whether it's, is Edmonton going to face Anaheim? Is it going to be LA? Like, oddly, they still have a chance. So it feels like the Pacific, of course, is holding everything up again.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that the Knights are in the driver's seat and just need a point to clinch. The Tortorella move has paid off. They haven't lost a game in regulation. Carter Hart has won five in a row. So if I'm Edmonton, I don't want to play the Knights in the first round. I'd rather play Anaheim. Now, that's not guaranteed. They are up 1-0. It looks like, though, if they can beat Minnesota here tonight to hang on to the third spot. But if I'm Edmonton, I'd rather have Anaheim in the first round than the Knights, obviously. And I don't know that the Knights having home ice over Edmonton is a big deal. We saw they had it last year, and Edmonton beat them 4-1.
Yeah, and I'm also not sure. I'm looking at the standings here, and like LA still has a shot to climb into, you know, kind of bump out Anaheim in that three spot. If you're the Oilers, you probably want a young, immature team like the Anaheim Ducks versus an LA Kings team that would probably be annoying to play against in the playoffs for what, a fourth straight year.
Well, I think this would be the sixth or seventh straight year they'd meet in the first round. It's some ludicrous thing. And you know, the Kings have gone to overtime 38 times this year. So, yeah, I'd much rather play an Anaheim Ducks team who has only not trailed in one game since the All-Star break, Charlie. In 23 of 24 games, they have trailed at some point. So it's a team certainly not in form. And this open style that they play without a lot of tight checking on the defensive end, I don't think will translate well to the playoffs.
How about in the Eastern Conference? We officially got the confirmation, I believe it was yesterday, that the Philadelphia Flyers are in the playoffs and they will be playing the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round. I don't think any of us saw both Pittsburgh and Philadelphia making the playoffs, let alone Pittsburgh getting home ice in it and then meeting in the first round. What do you expect out of that series as far as the intensity goes, especially given how starved both franchises and fan bases are to want to get their team back to relevance?
I don't know if this is the hatred level of 20 years ago or 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, but I saw the series price here at several books. It's up already. $1.75 on Pittsburgh, I think, is a little high. The Philadelphia team has been in good form. They had to grind it out to get into the playoffs, obviously. I think Tocchet's a very good coach. Vancouver didn't want him, and it was Philadelphia's game to get him. I think that's a heavy price. I think Philadelphia presses Pittsburgh here. Perhaps Ersin may be a little bit more in form than either of the Penguin goaltenders. So I would look at either playing the Flyers at plus 155 for the series, or the Flyers plus a game and a half, I think it's minus $1.35 or $1.40.
I'm looking at the scores right now. The Boston Bruins are currently up 4-0 on the Devils in the second intermission. A win by Boston tonight would essentially solidify a first-round series matchup between Carolina and Ottawa, with Ottawa getting locked into that second wild card. I'm just going to say it, Mike. I think Carolina is on upset alert if the Ottawa Senators, if they draw Ottawa, which it seems likely. I feel like those two teams play very similar stylistically, and I think Ottawa is going to be very annoying to play against. Do you see a long series between Carolina and Ottawa too?
Well, you know, Carolina never does anything in the playoffs. They once again, the one seed, and you know, I don't expect them to go to the Cup final. What's amazing to me, Charlie, is go through all these books. Ottawa, the eighth seed. You know, Montreal could be the two seed in the Atlantic Division. You know, and Ottawa's future prices are shorter than Montreal everywhere. At every book, Ottawa's shorter. And so I think Ottawa gets a lot of respect at the window. They could be done in the first round. They could make it to the Eastern Final. I think they're a very, very, very dangerous team now that they've got the blue line healthy again.
Yeah, no question. And I think the way they play defensively, and man, if they just get, if they're going to get this version, the last seven or so games of Linus Ullmark, who's seemingly unbeatable now, man, like that's not going to be a team that anyone wants to play against. But if you were getting the Linus Ullmark from a couple weeks ago, I think teams wouldn't have been too scared because their goaltending was so bad.
Yeah, and you're going to have a rookie on the other side, mostly for Carolina. So there's always that. I mean, he's been great this year. Right? He won 25 out of his first 29 starts, and he's clearly their number one now, not Freddie Anderson. So, but still, it'll be his first Stanley Cup playoff experience.
How about we talk about a team that didn't make it in the East, the Detroit Red Wings, who were sitting in first place in the East, I believe, in like mid-January, and they just completely sputtered yet again down the stretch in March. What do you do if you're the Red Wings? I mean, is Steve Yzerman's job legit, like on the line legitimately, or how much rope is he going to get? I have my general thoughts on that. I think they've gotten, I was actually doing a dive onto this yesterday, and during the heart of Detroit's rebuild, I think it was from 2017 to 2022, they fell in every single NHL draft lottery. So like they didn't get the same luck that the Blackhawks did by getting first overall in the Connor Bedard draft. Now, obviously that doesn't give excuses for how long their rebuild is taking, but what do you do if you're running the Red Wings?
Well, if Steve Yzerman's name was Joe Black, he'd have been gone 4 years ago. So I don't know how much more rope you give him. Let's not forget they had an epic collapse last year too.
Right.
Remember, they were well into a playoff spot. I think they led Montreal by like 16 points with 6 weeks to go and collapsed again. They lost seven or eight straight games in regulation and got caught again last year. I think they have to go in a different direction. It's really unacceptable for a franchise like that to just not be a relevant factor in even making the playoffs.
And it feels like they've been missing really that one cornerstone piece up front. Like I think Dylan Larkin is obviously a great player, but it feels like he's more of a kind of like a second line center and not like the first line, you know, the Macklin Celebrini, the Connor McDavid, Nathan McKinnon. Like he's not in that echelon, obviously, but it just feels like they don't have that franchise cornerstone. They have a lot of really good players like Lucas Raymond and, you know, Alex DeBrincat, but it doesn't feel like they have that guy that's just like, hey, just, you know, follow me, like I'll strap the team on my shoulders and kind of lead them. They've really been lacking that over this rebuild period.
Yeah, Larkin's a nice player, but he's not a superstar.
Right.
And they've lacked a superstar now for better part of a decade. And I guess some of the draft luck comes into that, but they haven't developed anybody or going out and gotten that key piece like what Minnesota did this year with Hughes. So it's disappointing times in Detroit.
What about the Washington Capitals? I know they were kind of knocking on the door late, but they're officially eliminated. Do you think this is the last rodeo for Alex Ovechkin? I feel like it probably is, but Evgeny Malkin kind of said the other day he thinks he's going to play one more year, and I don't know if he was just kind of trying to stir the pot and get the media talking, but it feels like we might be here at the end for Ovi.
Yeah, if it was an even money bet, Charlie, I'd bet he's done.
Yeah.
It seemed like that to me during this stretch where they needed like 30 things to go right for them to make it in the playoffs, and you know, he was celebrating pretty hard when they were eking out victories and staying alive. So I kind of read that body language and the game, what was it, Sunday in Washington, that was going to be his last and on home ice. So, yeah, that's my thought. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he came back because I think this is his life, but I just don't know if his body can do it anymore.
Yeah. Last one for you. How about the Columbus Blue Jackets? Do you think Rick Bowness is going to be coaching this team next year? Obviously, they're going to give him a blank check to see if he's going to want it. But I wonder if it's one of those weird contracts, kind of like the John Tortorella in Vegas, where it's just he's going to see it through the end of the season and then they'll revisit. What do you think? That would be a major loss if they had to kind of go in a different direction because Bowness was just there for kind of the second half. But what's your read on that situation?
Well, I think Rick Bowness entered into that deal saying, I don't know how this is going to go. And at his age, he doesn't want to make any kind of long-term commitments. Obviously, I think he's earned the right to guide this team for what if he wants to have a one-year, two-year, three-year deal. I like the core of this team. I think Jet Greaves is going to be a top-five goaltender. I know people disagree because he's not big enough, but I really do like Jet Greaves. So I hope Ricky Bonus wants to give it another run here. I think he did a great job with the Stars when he took over there. And I think you're correct in assessing that if he moves on and decides to retire, it's a setback for the Blue Jackets.
Mike, great stuff as always. We always appreciate your insight. We're going to do it one more time next week, and I'm sure we'll have some fun playoff talk. So thanks again for doing this, and we'll talk next week.
All right, have a great night, Charlie.
All right, you too. That is Mike Palm from Circa. Speaking of Circa, when the Blackhawks win, you can win. Circa Sports is giving away one grand prize stay and other prizes every time the Blackhawks win. Every time the Blackhawks win, someone will win a two-night stay at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, plus $500 stadium credit and a Blackhawks Centennial jersey. Additionally, 100 people will get a $100 credit on their Circa app account. Enter once and you'll be eligible to win on all future game days when the Blackhawks win home and away. See the Blackhawks contest page for details. Let's hit our final break here and then we'll wrap up Blackhawks Live presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Kind of want to round out the show. Jack and I had the privilege of being at the Blackhawks Hall of Fame weekend, the induction ceremony at the Blackhawks Ice Center on Friday, where the 9 members of the Blackhawks that have had their jerseys retired in organization got automatic inductees. And then the first inaugural class was Duncan Keith, Steve Larmer, both from the Heritage and Modern era, and then our very own Troy Murray, who went in the builder category. And Jack, that was a really cool day. We had the privilege to kind of stay after and kind of hover around. And I just kept finding myself looking around at this new Blackhawks Hall of Fame and the plaques and how amazing the new Blackhawks Ice Center is. And then, you know, watching the speeches, Duncan Keith, Steve Larmer, and then obviously Troy's son Blake, who I thought did a fantastic job in
really good
striking the right tones of, you know, obviously it was probably really hard for him to get up there and speak on his dad who obviously passed away a month ago. So it's still really fresh in a lot of our minds, but also being celebratory of the moment and what Troy meant to the organization, the city of Chicago, and obviously the fan base. And so I thought it was a really nice day on Friday, just kind of celebrating. And, you know, we obviously covered practice before too. And afterwards, all the players got dressed up and they kind of made their way over. And I thought it was really cool to hear Duncan and Steve specifically be talking just kind of have a little bit of a message to the new generation of Blackhawks and guys like Connor Bedard and Frank Nate? Like, they were all sitting in the, you know, in the stands watching, or kind of like on the floor and a few rows ahead of them. And I thought it was cool that in the same way that Steve Larmer and Duncan Keith credited the veterans behind them for what they meant to them in their development, Duncan and Steve were kind of saying the same thing to the young players on, you know, enjoy it, like live it up, but also play for each other. And so I hope that message, the Blackhawks young players took that to heart as they try to take the next step in their rebuild.
It just shows what happens when you play well and hard and win. And I think it's a good kind of, I mean, a lot of these guys are so young, a good like history lesson. I mean, I'm sure some of them saw Duncan Keith, but like not Steve Larmer or Troy Murray. So I think it was a good, you know, organization history lesson, and it shows how storied the franchise is and like what an honor it is to play for them. So it was great that they were there. The Ice Center is really nice too. I haven't been there since they redid it. And I think Steve did a good job plugging this. You can go, it's like open to the public. So if you want to pop in and see the Hall of Fame, you can. And it's a really nice display. And it was cool to hover around and like look at the Hall of Fame, read it, talk to some people. And it was a fun weekend besides the game result, but it was a fun weekend to see all those guys back. And they all got their own moment on the video board too, which was cool to see the fans share them on Saturday's game.
And that's actually why the Blackhawks decided to put the Hall of Fame at the practice facility, because that's essentially open to the public. So anyone can literally, it's open 365 a year. So anyone can really go in there and just kind of experience it, versus at the United Center, if there's a Chicago Bulls game day, then you can't go. A Blackhawks fan that might be from out of town that wants to go visit it, it might be closed or it might be locked. So I thought that was a cool touch. So that was a fun to be a part of on that day. This is our second to last show of Blackhawks Live. Our final one is going to be next Monday at 7 o'clock, and the Blackhawks obviously have their season finale tomorrow against the San Jose Sharks. Macklin Celebrini will be in town, so that'd be really cool. Bedard versus Celebrini to end the season. But also the Blackhawks will have their exit interviews on Thursday morning at the Blackhawks practice facility, which I imagine is going to go all morning, maybe into the early afternoon. So we'll react to a lot of what was said in the exit interviews and kind of put more of a bigger picture bow on the season in our final show next week. So that's going to do it for Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. We'll see you next Monday. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.